On the road or off, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. No wonder J.D. Power awarded Silverado the most dependable large light-duty pickup. Truck month is back at your local Chevy dealer. Check out the full line of Silverados at Chevy Drive Chicago.
Welcome to another edition of the Career Vision Podcast, where we talk to professionals about what they do, where they started, and everything in between. I'm Michael Piff, and the podcast is brought to you by Career Vision, who is helping young people find their career paths and professionals that are looking for a change. Oh, we got buttons. We got buttons. That's great. Okay. This is, you guys are should be very excited for what's about to happen until I tell you that you need to go check out careervision.org to find out more.
So clearly we got to do that again.
No, yeah, we will. I want that the whole episode. So you might have figured this out right now, but I have some characters in the studio with me right now that I'm very excited to talk to. These are the hosts of the Workers' Mic on WGN Radio, which airs Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock, and you can find all their episodes on WGNRadio.com. I've got Ken Edwards, Executive Director of the National Coalition of Labor. Ooh, that's a good button.
Thank you.
Ed Maher, Associate Executive Director of the National Coalition of Labor. Where's the button?
Hold on.
China.
That works.
Good to see you. Good to be with you.
Phil Davidson, Director of Communications.
I know what's coming.
Of the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. This is going to be too much fun.
I only have a certain amount of buttons, and I don't know how to work this other machine over here.
Just when you get bored, start pressing stuff.
Okay, sorry.
I thought that's what you were going to say for mine.
Trust me, I would do it for all of yours.
Thank you. Thank you for having us on.
I appreciate you guys so much for this. And the way we start these conversations is a quick shout out to your high schools. So I'll start, Ken. We'll go around the table here.
I went to Hillcrest High School in Jamaica, Queens, and affectionately known as Chillcrest. And you know who went there?
And you made it out alive.
And you know who went there? Fran Drescher, the head of the Screen Actors Guild, right? Isn't she the head? Right? The nanny, Fran Drescher.
Legend.
That's our claim to fame.
Same class?
She was a few years before me, actually, okay. Phil. So I'm not that
old. Did you guys cross over a little bit?
I don't think so. And quite frankly, if we did, I think she would have ignored me.
Just like everybody else.
All right, Ed, what high school did you go to?
I went to Fenton High School, home of the Bison in Bensonville.
Nice.
I grew up in Wooddale, affectionately known as Hooddale.
Is it really?
Yeah, to me. And Fenton High School. Had a great time.
Phil, where did you go to high school?
I went to Loyola Academy.
Oh, that's a sports mecca right there, isn't it?
It is a sports mecca.
Fancy.
I taught them everything they know, yeah.
What were you guys like in high school?
So, I was in a band.
You were in a band?
I was, yeah. I was in a punk rock band that turned into a heavy metal band.
This explains so much.
Just for my
glutton,
glutton for wanted to be the center of attention all the time. But yeah, I was in a band.
What'd you play?
I play guitar. Nice. And we can talk about it this later, like in terms of like you're talking about career trajectory, and how I got to where I am today, and all of it starts back with the band.
Nice.
Yeah, Ed?
What was I like in high school?
What were you like in high school?
I was pretty mellow. I usually wore band t-shirts almost every day.
What were the genres?
I mean, it was pretty much all like Metallica t-shirts or, you know, Korn or, you know, stuff like that. I was really
into...
Another
reason I like you.
Yeah, cool. Absolutely. I don't know. I got good grades. I played sports. I loved metal.
You got good grades?
I did.
Yeah. I didn't.
You didn't?
I was once absent from gym 41 times.
I'm not surprised.
And guess what they did? Guess what they did in New York? They're like, you can graduate. Yeah. just keep going.
You look fit enough.
Get out of here.
Instead of going to gym, he was running away from bullies, so he got his exercise.
Phil, what were you like in high school?
Super cool, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Obviously.
Ladies magnet.
Most popular guy. No, I was similar into bands and played sports freshman, sophomore year. And then my career peaked shortly thereafter. And yeah, I was.
Your career peaked.
Right. You know, my mom will say that I surrounded myself by delinquents, so I was always like the smart one amongst my friends. Yeah. There's probably some truth to that.
Nice.
All good, great guys, though.
What did you think you were going to do with your lives?
Yeah.
What did you want to do, I guess?
Yeah. That's interesting. Like, what do they say? Like, the best laid plans, right? So I thought, yeah, I thought I was gonna be a rock star.
Yeah,
like literally, I thought I was going to be a rock star.
Were you taking any steps towards wanting to do that? Were you guys recording or
you
or
name it, played shows,
gigs, and everything?
Did the whole everything? Took a couple of years off of college here or there.
Rick Rubin scouted you.
We got signed by Rick Rubin, and
wait, really?
Yeah, really.
Holy cow!
I know. We were actually successful for a little time.
What was your name?
Don't worry about it.
Nevermore.
Okay, here we go.
Quoth the Raven.
So I thought I was gonna be a rock star, and I put almost, and this is my key, I think I put almost all of my eggs in one basket, but thanks to my mom, who's a social worker, she's like, you know, you should, just in case you don't become a rock star, not that I don't believe in you, mm-hmm. but just in case, just go to college, finish college. So I was on the 7 or 8 year program in college and eventually finished. And then, of course, the band imploded. And then I, you know, went on to other things, which we can talk about.
Yeah. Ed?
You know, thinking back, it's an interesting question. I don't know that I've ever actually reflected on what I thought I was going to be when I was in high school.
What did you want to be? Did you have something like a goal?
I'm looking back and I'm trying to remember as far as like a career goal.
It's like that that interview question, like where do you think you'll see yourself in 10 years?
Yeah, no, like I mean, I look back on it and it's interesting now to think about it because like I tested well in like all the, you know, the college entrance tests and I had good grades, but I was going to go to Northern Illinois University, and I picked it. I knew that's where I was going to go. I wasn't ambitious, super ambitious about going to like an Ivy League school or anything like that. And I was going because my sister went there. I'd visited. I was mm-hmm. familiar with it. And that was just where I was going to go. And I chose my first major as operations management because I knew a guy who did that. It was like logistics. And he said you could make a ton of money doing that. And that was how I picked my first major. So there really wasn't a ton.
You should have stuck with that.
I quit after after like just over one semester.
Did you really?
Yeah, I took Calculus 2 my first semester. And I did fine in it. Yeah. But I just said I'm finally at an age where I can make the decision that I'm never going to do math again.
Oh, yeah.
And so I changed my major to English.
Yeah.
Which English.
My parents didn't give me nearly enough of a hard time about it. And, you know, the old joke of how do you get an English major off your front porch? Pay him for the pizza.
Good one.
Ouch. Phil, what did you think you were going to be doing?
I had a teacher my senior year who told me, you're a good writer. And I didn't think I was. I was like, okay, maybe I'll try that. And so, yeah. And I went to college and I became a journalism major. And I went to University of Iowa, which was a big school, you know, Big Ten, and had the resources to have a student newspaper. So I like jumped right in and did the college newspaper and everything. And then, that led to my first career as a journalist right afterwards.
What were your beats in college?
Start out in arts entertainment, and then, you know, City Hall is kind of whatever was needed that day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got a little taste of the journalism bug, and then I became a government reporter after college. And
get to the good part, Phil.
That's very exciting. I know you guys.
It is very exciting.
Get to the good listeners, part.
The part where he worked at Chippendales.
newspapers were a thing in like up until 2005, I would say. They were like on paper. You could actually like read the news in them.
Oh yeah,
I think a lot of our listeners.
They were hiring.
Yeah, they're like, what is this you're talking?
They still throw some in my neighborhood. I mean, yeah,
they throw them.
Yeah,
did they really?
There is. It's a band. It's very busted, but it's throws it. Yeah,
they thought the kid on the bike.
No, I wish.
Phil, get to the good part.
Oh, today's ads. Oh, Ken is referring to, and then after my journalism career imploded, and I decided I was living in Vermont. I was like, hey, I should probably go be a stand-up comedian because there's no place
that's
better
awesome.
To break into.
Which by itself is funny.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
It's very funny.
Phil being a stand-up comedian.
Well, I think Phil's hilarious.
Except that we've actually seen a clip of him doing stand-up from, what was that, 10 years ago plus?
Close, yeah. It was like 8
and
or
Phil,
9 years
Phil's
ago, yeah.
Legitimately funny.
Is it on YouTube?
Phil is funny. Phil is funny,
Phil's,
to be clear.
Thanks, oh, thanks, Phil Ed. Is funny.
Phil is funny.
Phil's hilarious.
I know.
Yeah, and we're encouraging Phil this year. This is the year, 2025.
The comeback.
Where Phil's comeback in stand-up comedy happens.
I think Phil's opening. He's opening for Tom Segura this Saturday.
That's right. It's kind of like when Jordan came back. That's what people are saying about me.
Are you going to wear a 45 jersey? What?
I might. I might have to.
Like Dave Chappelle's comeback or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Phil Chappelle.
I kind of want to stay there for a little bit, though. So what kind of encouraged you to try stand-up? Did someone say, hey, you should try this? Or you're like, hey, that's something I wanted to do?
a lot of it was boredom. I was living in a state where I didn't know many people. And I'll say this. I had thought about it for before I moved out there and was always just like kind of writing down little ideas on my phone or on pieces of paper. And then I was like, all right, well, I guess I might as well try this. And then you get up there and you do it. It goes horribly. But then if you get like one little nugget of a laugh, you're like, all right, that's something I can maybe build on. And so, yeah, that's pretty much what it came down to. And also, I think, like a lot of people who do it, you see someone performing maybe on TV and you're like, I'm better than that
guy. I could do that. I'm funny.
And then actually doing it, like actually, you know, committing to trying it versus just being the armchair quarterback who says you're better than somebody. And
right on.
Yeah.
Nice. So where did the path begin to where you guys are now? Where did that start for you?
So for me, it started in New York when my band imploded. And I'm not kidding.
Imploded is a word we're using a lot in this interview.
Yeah. My band completely imploded.
Yes.
Which, by the way, serendipitously was a good thing for me because I had kept going in that direction, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
It sounds like your mom was really supportive, though.
Oh, for sure. My mom was very, very young, social worker, you know, to this day is like, you know, my rock. But she said, you know, well, you're going to need to, you got to figure something out, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, and we had lawyers, the band had lawyers. I'm like, I could do that. And she said to me, that's fine. You're going to pay for it. Like, you're going to pay for taking the class to take the LSAT. And I said, okay. And I did. And I paid for it, cleaned my act up, if you will. And, you know, like
a little bit.
No, I cleaned up and took the LSAT and did well on it and was able to get into law school. And that's why I moved to Chicago to go to law school. And
where at?
I went to John Marshall, which is the sixth best law school
in the loop.
In the loop
on LaSalle Street.
Yeah,
is that part of what is it? UIC, City colleges.
They merged with UIC.
Oh, cool.
So I went to University of Chicago. So anyway, but that is so. That's how I got to law school.
But actually have a very reputable labor.
No, it was a great school. It teaches you how to be a lawyer, and it was perfect school for me. I was exactly where I needed to be in life.
Yeah.
And I was head of the Entertainment Law Society because I assumed that I would be able to take my knowledge and industry experience in the record industry and blah blah blah, and become an entertainment attorney. And once again, that was my plan. But, you know, the universe has other plans for you. And my first job was clerking at a labor firm. And I'm like, wait a second. I love this. I absolutely love this.
What did you like about it?
I like working for the people. My mom was a hospital worker, union hospital worker, grew up in a union family, you know, firmly believed in it. It felt right for me politically, right?
Yeah.
Consciously.
Yeah.
And I immediately knew that that's all I wanted to do. And so
advocacy was a big part of that.
Union advocacy, union worker advocacy, worker right? Advocacy. Because all lawyers are advocates, right? But this was union advocacy, worker advocacy. It felt right for me. And to be blunt with you, I was absolutely blessed because other than working for a firm for like a couple of weeks here or there, I've never had to bill an hour in my life.
Wow.
You know, I've worked for in-house for the unions my entire career. And was fortunate enough to have pensions, health insurance, right? And here I am today, retired from there, you know, now running the National Coalition of Labor. So that's how I got to where I am. It was, most of it was serendipitous.
Oh, my goodness.
But I just kept putting one foot in front of the other, right?
Yeah.
Like, kept moving forward. Where a lot of my coworkers my peers kind of got stuck. You ever remember, you know, people in your lives, right, that got stuck like a year or two after high school, and that's all they did, and they never really...
You peaked too early.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and who knows? Those are the chapters, and I'm in this chapter right now, and as soon as I get fired from WGN, that'll be my next chapter, right? Suing WGN.
I've listened to your show. I don't think that's happening anytime soon.
Thank you.
I will back up Ken on that. I mean, as the director of the coalition, he's got to take a lot of calls. He practices what he preaches.
Yeah.
I mean, he anybody who calls needs help, he calls them right back. Even people who aren't even members, I've heard him talk to. So I do have to tip my hat.
I appreciate
he believes in the mission. And he helps people.
Thank you, Phil.
That's very
thank
cool.
Thank you. Yep.
Ed, when did it?
Was that comedy? Was that a joke?
No, that was real.
No, that was real.
Only sincere it was a moment lot. I've ever said.
Yeah. That's the most heartfelt thing you've ever said to me.
And it was funny.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate complimenting him, but it's true.
No. Ed, when did it begin for you?
So my when I was, I think it was the summer before I went into my senior year of high school, I got a tip, and I forget where from, but to apply for the summer helper program at the IBEW Local 134. It's the Electricians Union here in Chicago. And oddly enough, you know, the business manager, Don Finn, is the president of our board now at the NCL. So things really sort of come full circle. But I applied for this summer helper program where basically, you know, electricians are out there doing their jobs and you're just the gopher. You, if they need something swept up or whatever, you do that. And at the time, I think I was getting paid $12 an hour. But if you worked more than 8 hours in the day, you got overtime. And I mean, it was during a time where it was so busy that we were working, you know, 6 to 6 every day, working on Saturdays, working on Sundays. I made more money than my dad, like at least 1 week of that summer.
Holy cow.
But I, you know, I worked with these electricians and it'd be break time or lunchtime and we all went to lunch together. And I mean, you've got people from all walks of life, all different backgrounds, but you sit around and talk to each other and you learn about different people from different parts of the city. And as, you know, a 17-year-old kid, it really opened my eyes and it kind of, I think, taught me to just never judge a book by its cover and, you know, just to relax and have fun. And that all these people were good guys. They all wanted to know about me. I wanted to know about them. And it was great. I loved it. I remember after the first summer, or after that, that summer, I was just like, man, I don't know if I, like, I'm planning on going to college. I don't know. Maybe I should just do this. And all the guys are like, yeah, it's not as much fun when you're 45 and your knees hurt. Like, go to college, kid. But they were, I mean, it was awesome. I loved it. And I worked through that summer helper program for, I think, one more year and then worked during school breaks for a union contractor in Schaumburg, McWilliams Electric. And, you know, they were amazing. I had a great group of people to work with, and I always loved it. So when I'd be on break from college, I would come back and work there. So I wrap up college and I get my first job out of college doing government relations for Deloitte, one of the big four accounting firms. Yeah. And it's one of those things where people are like, that is awesome. Like, you got a job there. That's fantastic. But it was people, you know, maybe have seen the movie Office Space. And I found that this was a real life version. I mean, my first day there, they had a thing where you sing happy birthday to everyone who has a birthday that month.
No.
So you sing happy birthday, and when it's happy birthday, dear, people say different things. And I'm standing there, I'm looking around, I'm like, is this actually happening? And then they ran out of cake, just like in the movie Office Space.
Well, deal breaker.
So I'm looking around, and I'm like, does anybody else understand? Yeah. Like, what's happening here? And no,
did you,
like,
immediately
huh?
tender your resignation?
No, but I. So I.
You know why they ran out of cake, Phil?
Yeah, you know. No, they ran out of cake before they got to me.
I'm going
to
burn the place down.
No, but I. You know, it wasn't a good environment for me. People didn't bother to learn your name. It was not fun at all in any way. I mean, you do your job, and I think you should be able to enjoy yourself while you're doing your job. But it was a very, very stuffed up atmosphere. And then there came, about a year and a half after I was there, there came the opportunity to apply at an association, the Construction Industry Service Corporation, based out here in the suburbs, which is a union labor management organization. And I was excited at the opportunity to go back and work with people who were just down-to-earth people. And I worked there for, I think, 3 or 4 years, and I got a call from my good friend Bob Ryder, who is the president of the CFL, Chicago Federation of Labor. He said that the operating engineers were looking for someone. Mm-hmm. And so I applied. I met with their gatekeeper, who was Ken Edwards, and he probably mistakenly recommended me for the job.
That is all true.
I didn't know that story.
I know. Yeah. I love getting the origin story.
For sure.
You vetted him?
Yes.
No way.
Yeah. So I've been, you know, Ken was my handler there at first, which is hilarious. Some of the stories that, you know, go back on
Ed,
that.
Ed showed up to work the day one. I'm this not making is a good this up, one. And he was wearing a pink shirt.
It was not pink. It was blue.
Whatever color it was. In your mind, it was blue. In my mind, it was pink. And I literally just looked at him point blank. I'm like, oh, you went with that shirt?
Yeah. I sat waiting for him. Move. On my first day, I sat waiting for him. He was going to get there at 8. He showed up at 10:30. He has his sunglasses on, and he just glances at me and says, you wore that shirt on your first day? And I swear, like, I'm just like, huh, what's wrong with this shirt? But I never wore that shirt again.
I really
didn't. But yeah, I worked at Local 150 for 15 years, and Ken had headed off to head up the National Coalition of Labor. And,
then a few years later, I said, Ed, you know, would you come work for us? First, I had to get the blessing of, you know, kiss the ring and get his blessing, and Mr. Sweeney. And he said, yeah, absolutely. So Ed came to work for us in the beginning of 2024.
Yeah.
And is the associate director and is my heir apparent.
Wow.
So one day, right? When, one day soon, when I get to actually really retire, it's all yours, my friend.
Or a Game of Thrones thing happens.
Coalition will be in good hands.
You think he's going to off me? Should I watch my back or something?
I mean,
is that what you're saying?
Take it however you want.
Wait a second. You know something I don't know?
In Game of Thrones, it would be like Phil that would off you and take it.
Because you didn't see it coming. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. It can't be too obvious.
I didn't see it coming because Phil's short, or I just didn't see it coming. Like, is that a short joke that you're making?
I'm not making a short joke about Phil.
Sorry.
Let's get back to the program.
I just made a short joke about Phil.
Actuarially, I'm like, you know, 5'11", it's not the shortest, but I happen to do a show with two giants.
You're taller than me. Well, no, that, Ed, your story speaks to the people that are listening that are looking to do something else. They're not happy where they are, and look how that turned out for you. Phil, where did it kind of click in for you?
So after working in newspapers, I dipped my toe into the political world for a little bit.
Okay.
And actually, more than a little bit, working for the speaker here in Illinois, and then I work for a congressman.
Who's that?
His name is Mike Madigan, actually.
Never heard of him.
Yes. Yes, there's a whole
enormous friend to working people here.
Enormous friend to working people.
No question about
people,
that.
Exactly. People can Google it.
Yes.
You can, or look on WGenerator.com. We got a lot of that stuff.
There you go.
A lot of that stuff.
How long did you work there?
2.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Did a cycle and a half, yeah. And then through another series of coincidences, I would say, then I worked for another congressman, Dan Lipinski, who's now retired.
Yep.
He was a very staunch pro-labor person. So
absolutely.
In those roles, I got to meet a lot of labor people, and I was always fascinated by it. And my mom was a union steward for the teachers union.
Oh, cool.
My grandpa was a local chairman. He was a railroad engineer way back when he actually used to, like, his real job, he was a fireman. He would shovel coal into the locomotive.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then I was fortunate enough to marry a young lady whose entire family is in unions and in leadership positions, unions, members of unions. And so I was just thrown into that world and was always fascinated by it. And also, I think, as Ed and Ken both point out to, like, I believed in it. It was like, these were my people, aligned politically, aligned, you know, just the way we feel about working people. And it's easy to work somewhere where you believe in the mission, you know.
And so now you are the director of communications
for the Carpenters Union, correct?
And it's the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council,
which
is consolidated, but it's, you know, Phil's being modest. Phil is the communications director for 50,000+ carpenters.
Wow.
And growing.
In three states.
So it's like, and the same thing with Ed. He was the comms director for Local 150 that had 20,000+ members, 24,000 members across three states as well. These are not easy jobs.
Right.
By the way. So you're communicating with your members, you're communicating with the public, you're communicating with the press, right? You're communicating with politicians, and then you're doing everything else that they tell you to do. Like, literally, I'm not kidding.
When they say things roll downhill, it usually stops at our door.
Definitely,
right, Phil?
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, like, hey, there is this terrible thing that's brewing.
Yeah.
Make it go away.
Yeah.
Just, we don't want to see this in the paper.
Like,
right?
Yeah. Make, how can we shoehorn this into the comms department?
<Yeah. laughs> But I would come to work, like, literally, like, you know, I would negotiate at nights or weekends or whatever, and every once in a blue moon, I stop at the hall to, like, grab a file or, you know, we had a gas pump at the hall and get gas, whatever. And sure enough, there's me, Ed, by himself in the building. Like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, Jim Sweeney, I got to kill the story that's coming out on Monday. It's like, I have 48 hours to do it. So it is and I was a lawyer for the union, right? So, like, it's one of these things, like, working for the unions, it is super, super rewarding.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question about it.
Yeah. No doubt. Like,
but as a lawyer for a union, for example, nobody's calling to say hello. Right? Every single phone call for 25 years is a problem.
Right.
Like, my boss won't let me wear shorts. I failed my 13th drug test, you know, whatever. Right. So like literally every single thing is a problem that you're trying to fix on top of pushing the ball forward, organizing new members.
But you make an extremely good point, because if somebody calls and says, hey, I got fired for no reason.
Right.
You work hard for a little bit of time on that and you get somebody their job back.
Sure.
Or somebody, you know, whatever it is, somebody isn't getting paid right and they don't know what to do, and you can make a couple phone calls and make sure that they're getting paid properly. Like the fruit of your efforts is there in the form of like a person that you've helped and done something that they couldn't do to make their lives better. And they're really, when you have those days, and in the union world, they happen all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is incredibly rewarding.
They feel good. You're not helping a, you know, megacorp's bottom line. Like, look, I saved, you know, 13 cents today. You're literally like,
you're helping, you know, like, good, well-meaning people.
You're helping all working people.
Right. Those people are the numbers that someone upstairs is not really considering too much about.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. And so, you know, you'll hear the knock on the unions that unions protect the weak.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's one of the union myths, right? And so, in our world, meaning the carpenters, building trades, operators, et cetera, all the building trades, if you're not showing up to work and doing your job, you don't have a job. End of discussion.
Right.
If you do drugs, you don't have a job. If you show up drunk, you don't have a job. So, that's a myth. And our members work hard. And when they get treated unfairly, then you have the union there to stand up and make sure that they're getting treated right. So,
someone's got to stick up for the working class.
Right.
You know?
So, if you're thinking about a career,
hey, you already beat me to it. Keep going.
If you're thinking about
career, took over the podcast already.
Well, it makes it way easier for me. Well, no, if someone,
I can read your questions.
I know. So no, what? You're like, move this along now. So when someone is starting one of those careers, how are they introduced to a union?
So that's a great question, and thank you for asking it. There's a number of different ways, right? So some of us grew up in a union family,
right?
A lot of people that listen to this show, and they call like, "Hey, how do I get my kid into the union? I didn't know this was even an option," right? There's a number of different ways at it, but if you get into the union world, meaning either you're a union member working, that can be it. By the way, that could be your career.
Mm-hmm.
Work for a union. End of discussion, right? Be a union worker, come out with a great retirement, pension, health insurance, etc. If you want to get into the union space, meaning work for the union, you go to union meetings, you show up, you volunteer, you go to rallies, things like that. If you want to represent the union as a lawyer, which I keep telling people, like, hey, come be a lawyer for the union. It is rewarding. You don't have to bill any hours, whatever. Yeah. Go to law school and go to a labor program.
And you get to use your power for good.
Yeah, exactly. You can look at yourself in the mirror. You know what I mean? So there are ways into this world, but you have to go out and seek them. Now, we in the building trades and unions in general have been our own best kept secret. Mm-hmm. And part of the theory of the workers' mic here is to change that dynamic and go, hey, everybody, here we are. We exist. Come with us. Be a part of us. We're trying to be more inclusive in this regard. So we appreciate your having us on here with your podcast and letting people know, you know, that there is this world out there.
Well, it's interesting because I've been listening to a bunch of the episodes in recent weeks.
Thanks.
And that's why I was like, I really want to talk to these guys. And so I guess you kind of touched on some of it, but what is kind of the overall goal of the workers' mic?
To make money for WGN.
Well, yeah.
I think the goal...
Specifically Kevin McDonough.
I say
W. Yeah, I really mean Kevin McDonough. He's the... You want to hear?
Yes. I kind of want to know what the process was of it coming together.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Kevin McDonough and this other guy named Steve Tarpley, who works for Kevin.
I work for Kevin or Steve. Yeah.
You work for Steve.
So you work two levels under Kevin.
So
call it Kevin GN.
KGN.
Yeah.
KGN.
Yeah.
So they called me and said, "Hey, Coalition of Labor, would you want to be on a panel for?" I want to say it was. Lou Manfredini's show, and he was going to have a labor thing and whatnot. And, you know, of course, nobody wants to hear me talk more than me. So I'm like, yeah, absolutely, we're going to be on the radio. And so they met me for coffee. They gave me this whole spiel and this pitch And I said, yes, the answer is yes. We're happy to participate in this. Sounds great. Be a good opportunity for people to get to know the coalition. We were pretty nascent at that point.
How did they know about the coalition?
Somebody, I think, I want to say Ron Whittingham from Megan Financial said, you should talk to this coalition.
Yeah.
So we have this whole, coffee for like an hour. And then they leave, and they called me within 15 minutes and said, hey, listen, forget everything we just said. Do you want your own show? And I said, yes. Why, yes, I do would like my own show. And that's when I called Ed and said, you know, would you be interested in being the co-host? He was still working at 150. And he said, you know, of course, yes. So we started the show. And at that point, the thrust of the show was really to get the Workers' Rights Amendment passed.
Yeah, there was a constitutional amendment to extend protection and enshrine into Illinois' constitution the right to organize, the right to collectively bargain. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge thing within the labor community at that time. So the timing of the start of the show was perfect because it allowed us to bring in different kinds of workers and union leaders and political folks. And the first handful, maybe half a dozen shows, really pushed what that would do for people and was kind of a, you know, it was just a way to explain what that amendment was all about and why it would be good for people.
Yeah, I thought we were going to be on for 6 months.
Yeah. And I mean, then the amendment passed in Illinois and it was like, okay, well, people really liked to hear these stories from union workers who it's like, what's your background? How did you get in? And like, you know, sometimes you'll hear people say like, union people get paid too much or whatever. Like the labor movement wants everyone to do better.
Right.
Like there's not this thing.
It's
where
that sea rising type thing.
That's
or
exactly
tides rising.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly right. Like I always say the hardest working person on the planet is probably making nothing.
Right.
Whoever that person is, they're making nothing, you know? And we in the labor movement want to see everyone doing better. Like whether you're union or non-union, if you're struggling to provide healthcare, if you have to choose between food and medicine for your children, that's horrible. We don't want that for you. Like, we want better things for people. And workers have to want that for themselves and for each other. So whether you're union or non-union, we have to lift each other up and realize that we have a lot more in common. We shouldn't be divided. We should be sort of recognizing each other as partners against sort of the groups that would want to pay you less and want to put you in a position to choose between food and medicine.
That are focused on their bottom lines and their shareholders.
Exactly.
They're not interested in their
and
workers.
Themselves and their yachts. Right.
That's why it's not the union mic.
And they're rock. Right. And that's right. It's not the union mic. We had talked about that. And it's the workers' mic, right?
Yeah.
Because it's obviously we're union centric, but we care about all workers. And right now, given you know the state of the world and unions having a 70%+ approval rating, it's a good time to organize.
Yeah.
And so we've turned into what I think is a very good way to get the word out about workers' issues, about unions, about what people can do to lift themselves up and how unions can help do that. WGN has graciously given us an opportunity to do that, and we have a nice microphone for it, right? WGN's a massive station.
Yeah.
And Kevin, basically recognized this. I give a lot of credit to him. Actually, we give all the credit to him.
Brains of the operation.
Because it was his idea. And, you know, so he's the one that started this thing. And here we are in year three, I want to say.
Year three, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I actually track a lot of the online numbers for you guys, which has been really, really good.
Yeah.
You're doing great.
That's what I want to hear.
I'm
but
sure glad
the thing
you said
is,
that.
Yeah. Kevin and I were actually talking about it before I came in here. You guys put a ton of work into that show. And it shows. At least it feels that way.
Describe a ton.
I mean,
we talk about it for 6 to 7 minutes before we go on the air.
I get here. But 15
you
or minutes
you
guy
you book people for your show,
for
people
sure.
that are credible, and you have very good discussions with them. So
Phil had the head of the AFL-CIO, the National Labor Federation.
That was huge.
Biggest guest we've probably had. And
it
was a Phil get. It's hard to argue against it.
We had the Attorney General on. We had the Megan Burke, the head of the Women's Soccer Association. Like all of a sudden, we've gotten some pretty high profile big guests, and that's
reporters, authors, CEOs.
Yeah, and there is a lot. I mean, you got to constantly just keep tabs on what's happening in the labor world.
Yeah.
So, well, let's put it this way. There's not a lot of news.
Yeah, no kidding. We're at the right time.
Yeah, there's certainly enough news. Yeah. We're talking about syndicating the show. and trying to figure out, like, what does that look like? Can we take this and move it around the country? So we're relying on WGN and the staff to see if we can make that happen. Because there are markets out there that have a dearth of radio programming, right? And this is a good way for information to get out. Not the only way.
They teach you that word in law school, college boy?
It's like death, but with an R.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Dearth metal.
Dearth metal.
That's what he used to play.
Dearth metal, good one.
On that note, one more thing to wrap things up. Someone comes to you, is interested in what you do.
Yeah.
What is one piece of advice you give that person?
Who?
The person that wants to talk to you.
What does she look like?
Is that the advice? What are you talking about?
here's my piece of advice. All right, I will be perfectly honest and blunt with you, and that is, don't worry about, like, you know, reach for the stars and you can do anything and all this nonsense that you hear on TV. Like, you can live your dreams, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, be a good person. Right. Treat others well.
Yeah.
You know, don't burn bridges. Make connections. Talk to people. Put yourself out there. And and if you find, like, kind of like you, Ed, like, you found what you wanted to do. You knew what you didn't want to do. Right. And I worked at a law firm in New York for summer. Right. I worked at, there's 3,000 employees there, you know, and I'm like, oh, my God, then the food is great. They have their own cafeteria. But I knew that wasn't for me. And you will find what you want to do in life. And when you find that thing that you want to do, then you pursue that. Right. Like, kind of like Phil, you're saying, we all kind of got into this labor movement because it's fulfilling. And I feel like I haven't really, you know, I've worked hard. Mm-hmm. But it's not like I dread going to work. You know what I mean? And I feel bad for the people, like you're saying, Ed, that trudging on subways, you know, going to meaningless jobs just to make money for their, you know, corporation or whatever. Find something that speaks to you, and then and then pursue it. Make connects.
I've had jobs where I was like, oh, God.
You sit in your car until the last minute. Exactly. Just like,
I'll be honest. I've never felt that with my current job.
Same.
Yeah. Of course, there's days where, like, oh, this is annoying, but, man, it's exciting to go to work every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, exciting. It can be stressful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, we went through at Local 150. I remember we went through a year of a really horrible contested election where they went after my law license. And the Department of Labor was involved, et cetera, and some other federal agencies. And that was stressful.
Yeah.
That was really stressful.
A wee bit, yeah.
But you know what? That's part of life, right? Right. And so, you know, as my mom, I'll go back to her for a second, will say, like, you know, the good times don't last forever, but neither the bad times.
For sure.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think that's how I feel
this
about
this. Too shall pass.
Yeah, I feel that about the current state of the world, right? This isn't going to last forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's stand up and fight, and here's just, you know, a way to do it.
Ed, what's a piece of advice you would share to somebody?
I mean, I guess I would say two things briefly. One is something that my mom told me when I think I was like 17, and I lied to her about something that was like stupid, and she was really upset. And I was like, why is this a big deal? And she said, integrity is the most important thing you have. And once it's gone, you don't have it anymore. So, like, be a person of integrity, you know, be truthful with people, be honest with people. Yeah. And I think that's really important no matter what you want to do. It's just good advice, and don't learn the hard way not to, you know, just, you know, take that with you. And then, you know, not to get too, like, cliche or philosophical, but I've never really, you know, I don't know what the meaning of life is, but I think the closest that I've ever sort of considered that it might be is finding a way to be of service to other people, like help other people. And if you can do that, you can be happy. No matter what, I think no matter what way you're doing it, if you can try to find a way to help other people and, you know, be of service, be helpful to other people, you'll probably be able to find purpose in whatever it is that you're doing.
And people would be more inclined to help you if you're that kind of person.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think good things come around.
And even if not, even if it doesn't matter, just pay it forward a little bit.
For sure. Like, I always say like, I give money to people on the street, and people are like, oh, that guy's not going to spend it on food. It's like, I don't care. Nor do you know that. Well, you know what? The thing is, like, I do it out of selfish reasons. I do this to make myself feel good. It makes me happy to do this kind of stuff. So if you can give money to people on the street in a selfish way, I think that's what I do. But, you know, doing, as silly as that sounds, I mean, doing nice things for other people and being of service and being helpful makes you feel good.
Selfish philanthropy.
Yes. You know, I like it. It sounds weird, but I think it's a thing.
I like it.
All right, Phil, close us out. What is one piece of advice you would share with somebody?
I'm going to simplify it and just, I would advise someone, like, pick something that you're good at and focus on it and become the best at it. Because I think a lot of times, you know, there's distractions and you get, everyone wants to be well-rounded, but you'll stand out if you've got your one area that you're passionate about. Whatever you find that is your niche in life, go for it and give it your all. And then you become the best at it and then you're undeniable.
So that's actually something Career Vision does, is they try to figure out what that thing might be. And I recommend people check them out, careervision.org. Thank you guys so much for doing this.
This was fun.
It went a lot longer than you probably expected.
I enjoyed this.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Oh, so we're doing it again next week?
Yes, definitely. Okay. Actually, we're going to do it in like 5 minutes. But anyway, for Career Vision, I'm Michael Piff. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks.